Are you prepared to bug out? Infidel Body Armor and an Army Ranger have produced a high-speed DVD and book to show you how to drive in combat, patrol, and how to survive in combat. Skills you'll need when it hits the fan. Go to DrivenDVD.com. DrivenDVD.com.
You're listening to Resolution Radio. Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
You're listening to Renegade Broadcasting.
Storm is coming. Our storm. And when it arrives, it will shake the universe.
To the Solar Storm. This is your host, Kyle Hunt, coming to you September 20th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me here on RenegadeBroadcasting.com. Please check out RenegadeTribune.com and head on over to HeathenHerbs.com, where I know Sinead is working on a number of new products. So check that out. A new soap. There's a black salve, a drawing salve that she's working on, and also incense. So that will be something definitely to keep on your radar, especially with the holiday season coming up here. But next time I have Sinead on, I'll let her describe the products herself. I am live tonight, so if you'd like to call in, please consider doing so. The number is 747-999-6407. Again, 747-999-6407. If you are in the chat room, please say hi and also let the other chatters know that they can call in tonight. I know I usually do the pre-recorded shows, so people aren't really even listening live all the time, just waiting for the archives to come out, but I'm sure I've got a few live people. Tonight, I want to go over some current events. Now, everyone, absolutely everyone, is talking all about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I saw her referred to as the notorious RBG, which is just ridiculous. This Jewish woman is just being hailed as such a hero, even by people on the right, like based Tucker Carlson is, you know, having people on to sing her praises. I didn't really watch the whole episode or anything from Friday night, but the whole thing was about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I just check out what the talking points are for base Tuck. You know, you can't cuck the Tuck, and people just love this guy. But everybody has been talking about this, and there's a whole battle over who will become the next Supreme Court justice. And honestly, I don't really care about any of that. And I'll get into why. People think it is so crucial. This is the most important reason that we need to vote for the president, because the president can put people on the Supreme Court. It doesn't matter. It honestly does not matter, because we're living under Zog regardless. But first I wanted to talk about Ginsburg herself, a little bit of her biographical details that I think warrant some consideration. And it's not something I see a lot of people mentioning about the notorious RBG. But I saw this in the Daily Mail right up after her death. Just a little segment that caught my attention. In 1950, Ginsburg started attending Cornell University, where she would meet her husband, Martin D. Ginsburg, during a literature class taught by famous novelist Vladimir Nabokov. Do you remember that name? You know who this author is? It's the person who wrote Lolita, the book Lolita. We explored it a bit in the second part of our Pizzagate documentary. And that whole thing, by the way, that whole investigation that we did, which is about 3.5 hours long, is up on Sinead's Goyim Goddess BitChute channel. So do check that out. Review it, even if you've seen all the parts, and share it around. It's a really good investigation. Anyway, she met her husband at this class taught by Vladimir Nabokov. And that was according to the biography called Ruth Bader Ginsburg, A Life by Jane Sharon DeHart. So the reason she was impressed by her soon-to-be husband was because Martin was able to answer Nabokov's quiz questions about Charles Dickens. And Ginsburg was apparently smitten, later saying that Martin was the only young man I dated who cared that I had a brain. Oh, most of the other boys just, they liked me for my looks, my incredible, beautiful Jewish features. But Martin, he liked my brain. Now, I looked into this just a little bit more, her relationship with Nabokov. Apparently, she just was a big fan of Nabokov. But I couldn't find too much about, you know, her basically being mentored by this guy. So I looked into this article in Open Culture and just found some interesting things about Nabokov himself and his politics. It says, Ginsburg, who studied under Nabokov as an undergraduate in the early 50s, still sings his praises over 60 years later. He was magnetically engaging, she told the Culture Trip this week. He stood alone, not comparable to any other lecturer. Wow, she really put this guy up on a pedestal. A pederast pedestal. Or pedophile pedestal, yeah. The pedo pedestal. That's basically what our culture is all about, putting pedos on a pedestal. Excuse me, I shouldn't even call them pedos. Just a little bit of alliteration. They're child rapists. And last month, the Supreme Court justice wrote a New York Times op-ed titled Ruth Bader Ginsburg's Advice for Living. Okay, so when was this actually published? 2016. Okay, so this is coming to us from 2016. Second on the list, teachers who influenced or encouraged me in my growing up years. Her first example, Nabokov, who changed the way I read and the way I write. So this guy was very influential to the notorious RBG. If Nabokov so profoundly influenced Ginsburg's reading and writing and made such a dramatic impression on her as a professor, would we find any traces of that influence in her jurisprudence? Perhaps, as Jennifer Wilson notes in the Los Angeles Review of Books, Nabokov pronounced himself resolutely anti-segregationist. You all gotta mix together. He's supposedly Russian, Slavic, but I'm pretty sure he could be a Russian Jew, Nabokov. This was among the few issues he spoke out against strongly and unambiguously. Marxism, fascism, anti-Semitism, and racism. He was an anti-fascist, and he hated the anti-Semites. Oh, and just couldn't take any racism. I guess he also didn't like Marxism, but I don't know about that. You may or may not see some influence of Nabokov, of his repugnance for legalized discrimination, or of his meticulous wording in Ginsburg's passionate dissent to the 2013 gutting of the Voting Rights Act, for example. There, Ginsburg called voter suppression the most constitutionally invidious form of discrimination, and wrote, given a record replete with examples of denial or abridgment of a paramount federal right, the court should have left the matter where it belongs, in Congress's bailiwick, whatever the hell that is. Oh, bailiwick, whatever the hell that is. Within their constraints of legal writing, I'd argue Ginsburg's best sentences contain the cutting precision and wit of Nabokov's scathing, deeply considered observations. Now, did Nabokov's fascination with, let's say, the Lolitas influence Ruth Bader Ginsburg's advocacy as a woman of the judicial system? Now, Snopes is going to tell you that this is absolutely false. did Ruth Bader Ginsburg say that pedophilia was good for children? No, she didn't have that exact quote. Pedophilia is good for children. What a lot of people do point to, though, is how in 1974, Ginsburg and Fagan Fastu published a report examining how federal law frequently employed gendered language. She didn't like the gendered language. No more gendered language. So this report was used as the basis for the Sex Bias in the U.S. Code, a report published in 1977, which included a passage explaining the purpose of the study. Okay, the Constitution, which provides the framework for the American legal system, was drafted using the generic term man, while the United States Supreme Court, the ultimate interpreter of the Constitution, might have determined that man also means woman in terms of rights, duties, privileges, and obligations under the Constitution. The court instead has chosen on numerous occasions to deny to women certain rights and privileges not denied to men. So she's trying to make this out to be a kind of feminist issue. So what she does is she provides a definition of rape as a way to use the basically gendered language properly. And so what this 1973 clicked on something by accident. What this 1937 Senate bill says that she quotes, saying that this is a good paragraph. Take this as an example of what a good legal paragraph is. She provides this. A person is guilty of an offense if he engages in a sexual act with another person, not his spouse, and compels the other person to participate, A, by force, or B, by threatening or placing the other person in fear that any person will imminently be subjected to death, serious bodily injury, or kidnapping. 2, has substantially impaired the other person's power to appraise or control the conduct by administering or employing a drug or intoxicant without the knowledge or against the will of such other person, or by other means. So these are ways that you can define rape. Okay, and then the third is interesting. The other person is, in fact, less than 12 years old. So what some people have said is that RBG here is essentially advocating for the age of consent to be lowered to 12 years old. Okay, 11-year-old, if you're with an 11-year-old, that might be rape, okay? But 12 years, come on, think about all the life experience. 12 years old, yeah, that child can consent. It's only rape if the child is less than 12 years old. So what they say here at Snopes is that it appears that Ginsburg was first accused of wanting to lower the age of consent to 12 shortly before she was confirmed to the Supreme Court in 1993. This accusation reemerged in 2005 after John Roberts was nominated. Both Senator Lindsey Graham and Fox News host Sean Hannity, for instance, used this line to argue that Ginsburg was very left-wing and immoral. So they're just saying, she was just trying to provide a good paragraph about gendered language, okay? Ginsburg, right here, Ginsburg's report was about changing gendered language, not the age of consent, in our existing laws. In the quoted passage, she was not arguing for or against lowering the age of consent. She just chose this because it was good gendered language. She didn't have any, you know, political position here. She just thought it was a great paragraph of legalese. Rather, she was quoting a proposed Senate bill as an example of how appropriate gender-neutral pronouns should be used. Ginsburg wrote that she used this bill because it conformed to the equality principle, not because she agreed with the presented age of consent. Okay, so let me see here. Was that? So they had said, they had written in here in this Snopes article, the 1937 Senate bill, and I was pretty sure it was 1973. And I'm looking at the copy of this. The image here, and it says the 1973 Senate bill. So that makes sense, because that's when she was writing about it. And that is interesting, right? That this woman was mentored by Nabokov, and then she quotes a little piece of legalese as a great example of gendered language, where it says that the age of consent should be 12. Oh, but there's no real conspiracy going on here, guys. I was listening to the radio while I was driving around earlier, and I had on NPR, and it was a Huffington Post writer as the guest who was talking about how, oh, all these people talking about child trafficking, they don't understand. They just don't, they don't get it. Actually, he had a very homosexual voice, but I'm not going to do that. So I'm just going to do as a Jew voice, probably a Jew homosexual. He was saying, most children, they're abused by people in their own families. So when we have this idea of the strange danger, that's just put forth by these anti-trafficking organizations. Oh, they just try to sensationalize these stories. We should, just basically the message that he was putting forth was, we shouldn't have people, you know, grabbing their shotguns and going out and trying to hunt down the pedophiles. No, I mean, what we need to do is we need to come at this from a position of equity and, you know, social justice. We need to ensure that these children aren't homeless, you know, that they're not forced into this kind of life. Basically saying, we need social justice and uplifting the society. That's what's going to solve. I don't disagree that we need to make sure that children in America are taken care of and protected, not through some, you know, very left-wing socialist scheme, more like a national socialist scheme. But indeed, we do need to go out and hunt down the people who are abusing them. He made it seem like it was a complete fiction. He said, oh yeah, these anti-trafficking organizations had blown this out of proportion, sensationalized it. They were poisoning, putting forth poison. And that all that QAnon did was add on a little bit more poison to it with their narrative of these child sex trafficking rings. If it was a call-in show, I would have loved to call in and say, yeah, can we talk about Jeffrey Epstein? Just one example that's out there in the public. He wasn't related to any of these girls. In fact, they were all, how do you say? Oh, shiksas. Yes, shiksas. And this man, very clearly, flew around presidents, prime ministers, people, actors, people of great importance in our world on something called the Lolita Express. Maybe you've heard of Lolita, you know, the movie by Stanley Kubrick is based on the book by Nabokov, who just Ruth Bader Ginsburg just loves. You know, and this is a very real thing. Child sex trafficking. So why are you trying to get people not to look into it? Just to trust that you and the good people at Huffington Post will just advocate for their interests. We'll just have a universal basic income, and then, you know, these children won't have to be out in the streets anymore. Don't go out and try to hunt down pedophiles. Yes, indeed, go out and try to hunt down pedophiles. So, don't do anything illegal, guys. Don't. I'm serious. I'm not advocating for breaking the law that was crafted by pedos. No, we couldn't do that. There's actually a testimony from 1993 by Susan Hirschman, executive director of the Eagle Forum, when she talked to the Senate Judiciary Committee about Ruth Bader Ginsburg and her concern with Ginsburg wanting to lower the age of consent. So you could look into that. This is something that has been around for a little while. Now, the reason I don't really care who fills her seat is that Zog is going to choose. We will not get somebody who is fighting for our interests there. For example, let's talk about one of the people that was nominated by Trump and confirmed by the Senate. Gorsuch, Neil Gorsuch. He actually joined with the libtards on the Supreme Court earlier this year in July to overturn the conviction of a Native American Amerindian child molester who repeatedly raped a 4-year-old girl and reportedly ruled that, quote, about half of Oklahoma is a Native American reservation and tribe members within are now set to become exempt from certain state obligations such as paying state taxes. So this is the constitutionalist, right? An originalist. Yep. He joined in with the libtards. This guy was nominated by Trump, confirmed, and gave away half of Oklahoma to Amerindians and said that this guy, who wasn't even part of an Oklahoma tribe, is going to be completely overturned. His conviction is going to be overturned after raping a 4-year-old girl. This is what happens when Trump has his way with who's on the Supreme Court. Are you really expecting anything else this next time? Do you think that magically he's just going to put in somebody who's totally based in red pill, guys? He's just so red-pilled. Let's look at another example how the conservative Supreme Court is really defending our rights here as Americans and making sure that the libtards, don't have their way. Conservative Supreme Court redefines sex to protect gays and trannies from discrimination. This was from earlier this year. This was from June. So I had featured this on the Tribune. I wrote, remember how everyone was telling us that we had to get Trump elected because he would be able to select the next Supreme Court justices? And this is what really matters? Remember that? You guys remember? Well, the conservative-dominated Supreme Court just voted 6-3 to redefine sex to include gays, trannies, and gender-confused people. Sex meaning, male or female. That now includes gays, trannies, and gender-confused people. Writing these freak shows into a 1964 law intended to prevent discrimination based on a person's sex, which is biologically binary. This was a law that was saying, you can't just discriminate against women for being women. Okay? And now I know a lot of the fashy trad guys out there say, that's a terrible law. Well, this law is now being used to ram in all sorts of anti-discrimination suits against people who don't want freak shows, who don't even know what the hell gender they are. So Justice John Roberts and Justice Neil Gorsuch sided with the libs, the libtards, on this one. NBC, breaking, Supreme Court rules LGBTQ people are protected from firing workplace discrimination by existing civil rights law. Wow. Okay, the Supreme Court's majority decision was given by Justice Gorsuch. An employer who fires an individual merely for being gay or transgender defies the law. So how are you going to determine why a tranny freak was fired? Was it for their sexual orientation or because they were causing insane disturbances in the workplace? I'm pretty sure now that whenever a LGBTQ Rainbow Warrior is fired for good reason, there's going to be a lawsuit. The decision involves much more than reasons for why a worker can be fired. According to the New York Times, it says that opinion and two dissents spanning 168 pages touched on a host of flashpoints in the culture wars involving the LGBT community. Bathrooms, locker rooms, sports, pronouns, and religious objections to same-sex marriage. The decision, the first major case on transgender rights, came amid widespread demonstrations, some protesting violence aimed at transgender people of color. This is a simple and profound victory for LGBT rights, said Suzanne B. Goldberg, a law professor at Columbia. Many of us feared that the Supreme Court was poised to gut sex discrimination protections and allow employers to discriminate based on sexual orientation and gender identity, yet it declined the federal government's invitation to take that damaging path. So are we in a free country if a business owner is not allowed to freely hire and fire who he or she pleases for whatever reason? White people can be fired in an instant if a coworker says anything about an old tweet they found that just says that they support white rights or something like that. There's no fairness and equity in America. And none of these Zog Supreme Court justices are going to do anything about protecting our interests. It's just that simple. So these people who are hyper-focused on Trump choosing the next Supreme Court justice, it's ridiculous. None of them are on our side. Absolutely not. Do you know that when RBG was still alive, 4 out of 9 of the Supreme Court justices, so that's 44%, were Jewish? That is 22 times, or 2,200% overrepresentation. That's insane, because supposedly they're only 2% of the country. Now, Sonia Sotomayor is questionable. I'm pretty sure it's open that she has Jewish heritage, but she's always put forth as this kind of spicy Latina. But her mother was born Selena Baez, and Baez is a Sephardic Jewish name. Soto is a Sephardic Jewish name, and Meyer is a Sephardic Jewish name. Sotomayor. So, and her mother has a Jewish name as well. Regardless, let's just say it was 3 out of 9. That's 33%. 33% representation on the Supreme Court when they're only supposedly 2% of the overall population here in America. So, of course, Ginsburg, Jewess, Stephen Breyer, a Jew, and Elena Kagan. Oh, I just shudder thinking about her, also a Jewess. Speaking of Jewish overrepresentation, I just wanted to bring this up here. The Senate is 9% Jewish. That's a 650% overrepresentation. I could rattle off some of the names here. And I'm pretty sure this is fairly up to date. And the House is 8% Jewish, which is a 600% U.S. overrepresentation. Actually, I don't know what numbers they're using here, because that would be a 400%. I don't know. They might not be using the semi-official 2%. That's just what they always say they are, 2%. Anyway, that's going to be a very big overrepresentation. But here's the thing. It doesn't really matter whether or not the person in office is Jewish. Are any of them doing anything to check Jewish power? No. They're all good goyim. They're all funded by Jews. So even though you can look at these statistics and say, wow, Jews have an overrepresentation, you know, in these different seats of power, they're funding all of them. Basically, they have it all in lockdown. They have 100% representation. Then they kvetch about AOC or one of her crew, you know, those new radical lefty Dems who are anti-Semites because they said something in the past about Israeli expansionism or something. It's all a big show. It's a charade. All right, now I want to talk about something that these Jews in positions of power all seem to get behind, and that's Black Lives Matter. Now, there are a few right-wing Jews who pretend to be against this, but the Jewish community as a whole, especially here in America, all these organizations that represent all these Jews got together and they say, we support Black Lives Matter. And they've been doing this kind of stuff for a long time with that commie Martin Luther King, and even well before. They're the ones who started and led the NAACP. They've been doing this forever. And they want to ally themselves to their brothers in the struggle. Well, do you know how much damage they've caused? Now, white supremacists are the big terrorist threat here in the country. If you listen to the FBI under that disgusting leader, Christopher Wray. But look at how much damage was done by these BLM terrorists. Not even just the people that they assaulted and murdered, but the businesses that they burned down, all the glass they broke, all the cars they destroyed. We'll get into this on the other side, how the 2020 Black Lives Matter riots, the most damaging riots in U.S. history. But it's never put in that perspective, is it? All right, back in just a little bit. Social justice sure is costly, isn't it?
Have been used by people since the dawn of time. When Rockefeller introduced allopathic medicine, many herbal remedies fell by the wayside as people put their faith in prescription pills and the world just gets sicker. Here at Heathen Herbs, we look to the past and to nature for answers. We offer tinctures, magnesium skin cream, lip balm, tooth powder, colloidal silver throat spray, and more. Check us out at heathenherbs.com.
Yeah. KD Armor raised the standard. Finally, AR-500 steel core body armor that comfortably conforms to the chest and torso. Unique design distributes weight, feeling lighter, increases mobility, and lessens fatigue. Introducing the Combat Quad Bend CQB, a revolutionary plate forming process that caters to the end user. The CQB is an industry game changer, a must-have for the ladies. Available now, only at katiearmor.com. CATIArmor.com. Come and take it.
You're listening to Resolution Radio, Radio, Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
Thanks for listening to Project Schoolyard Volume 2. For more information about the project, as well as lyric to the songs on this CD, please visit www.tightrope.cc. You can also find jokes, news articles, a photo gallery, free CD downloads, and a secure online shopping cart. We carry a full line of flags, t-shirts, CDs, books, stickers, and other products of interest to racially conscious white people. Please visit www.tightrope.cc.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey Purified Water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest priced filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
You're listening to Resolution Radio, Radio, Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
Are you prepared to bug out? Infidel Body Armor and an Army Ranger have produced a high-speed DVD and book to show you how to drive in combat, patrol, and how to survive in combat. Skills you'll need when it hits the fan. Go to DrivenDVD.com. DrivenDVD.com.
Storm. Again, this is live, so if you want to call in, you've got about half hour to do so. I don't see myself going much beyond that. 747-999-6407. Now, before the break, I was talking about the cost of the BLM riots, which have been funded by all these major corporations. It's just insane. And all the politicians just sucking up to them. What has this actually cost? Well, from Axios, $1 billion plus riot damage is most expensive in insurance history. The protests that took place in 140 U.S. cities this spring were mostly peaceful, but the arson, mostly peaceful. Okay, sure. Sure thing, buddy. But the arson, vandalism, and looting that did occur will result in at least $1 billion to $2 billion of paid insurance claims. And so the real damage is way beyond that, because you know damn well that the insurance is not paying out what was actually lost. It seems a lot of businesses won't even recover because the insurance isn't going to give them nearly what it takes to repair their businesses. And this eclipses the record set in Los Angeles in 1992 after the acquittal of the police officers who brutalized Rodney King. Do you know what Rodney King was doing? Somebody need to beat the crap out of them. Anyway, how it works, a company called Property Claim Services, PCS, has tracked insurance claims related to civil disorder since 1950. It classifies anything over $25 million in insured losses as a catastrophe. Reports that the unrest this year, from May 26th to June 8th, will cost the insurance industry far more than any prior one. That number could be as much as $2 billion and possibly more, according to the Insurance Information Institute, which compiles information from PCS as well as other firms that report such statistics. The protests related to George Floyd's death are also different because they are so widespread. It's not just happening in one city or state, it's all over the country, Loretta L. Waters of the III tells Axios. And this is still happening, so the losses could be significantly more. Well, isn't that something? What a color revolution we've got going on here in America. Yes. $2 billion in insurance claims. That's something, huh? Okay, so let's talk about one of the other things that is very costly about what's going on here with the BLM, so-called mostly peaceful activism. Well, they're really encouraging people to go out and kill white people. Oh, but it's a joke, guys. They're not really encouraging that. They're just telling jokes here. Yep. Well, there was this comedian, this stand-up comedian, Sophie Dookie, or something like that, who was on Frankie Boyle's BBC2 show called New World Order, where she joked about killing whitey. So let's listen in here to this little clip from New World Order, brought to you by the New World Order. Kill whitey! Ha 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 ha! Well, she said when they said that, she said that they're not really meaning that they want to kill whitey. But then she quips, oh, but we do. We don't really want to kill whitey, but we do. It kind of reminds me of Jamie Foxx with, and then I get to kill all the white people in the movie. How great is that? Yeah, killing whitey's just great. It's so funny. I love jokes about killing white people. It's beautiful. She then goes on to claim that whiteness is a capitalist structure. Jewishness is a capitalist structure. So if you just replaced what she's saying about capitalism later on about with Jewishness, yeah, then you'd have a more accurate statement. But let's just listen in. Whoop. My bad. I didn't unmute my browser. See, live radio? It's not where it's at. You need to record this stuff so you get it right.
Prevalent today. They're so real today. Like the myths that we have about black power, like black power, Wakanda, it's still a world where Africa was never colonized, was never pillaged for its resources. Mm-hmm. Like white power is Trump Tower. Like these things are put against each other. But when we say we want to kill whitey, we don't really mean we want to kill whitey. We do. But when we say we want to kill whitey, it's like a capital.
Did you hear that? It means we don't really want to kill whites. We do. Ha 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 ha. Oh, that's so funny. Oh, Miss Duker, you're just dropping dookies all over the place here. That was brilliant. I loved it. Okay, let's just.
It's like
one more time.
When we say we want to kill whites, we don't really mean we want to kill whites. We do. But when we say we want to kill whitey, it's like it's a capitalist. Not today.
We're gonna finish the show.
But when people react to people saying that, but white privilege, whiteness is a capitalist structure. It benefits itself. Yeah. It hurts white people. It hurts non-black people. It hurts black people. But still, this kind of fear of a black alternative, and it's these sort of rhetorics battled against each other. These extreme capitalist rhetorics of supremacy. Prevalent today. They're so real today. Like the myth.
Yeah. Okay. So let's just talk about how funny it is. This is the thing that you don't really want to kill whitey. That's so funny. No, actually, it's not. It's not at all. It's incitement to murder. And these low IQ people who are fed all this media BS are actually going out and murdering white people as a form of justice. I just published this today on the Tribune, so you might want to go check this out. It's not going to be covered by mainstream news. It's not going to be covered likely by Breitbart or Tucker Carlson or any of those other shill organizations. Maybe the Gateway Pundit will cover it. Again, that's a shill organization. BLM terrorist wearing Justice for Breonna shirt murders three white men in Louisville restaurant. So the local media covering the story is portraying the shooting as totally random. We don't know why he went and did this. They're not mentioning the races. They're not saying it's a black man who went and killed white man or white men. But they would definitely be announcing all this and making it into an international story if it was reversed. You know damn well they would. If somebody was wearing a Dylann Roof t-shirt and then they went into a bar with a bunch of black people and shot them up, I'm pretty sure you'd be hearing about this. But you're not hearing about this, I'm sure. So I went to a local news site, WDRB, and found a little bit of the reporting on this. Police responded around 11:30 p.m. to Bungalow Joe's Bar and Grill, according to MetroSafe. Louisville Metro police officers arrived to find three men who had been shot. According to LMPD, two of the men were pronounced dead at the scene. Third victim was taken to University Hospital, where he died. One of the deceased victims has been identified as 24-year-old Stephen Matthew Head. The other two victims have been identified as 26-year-old Torian Jermaine Hudson and 48-year-old William Scott Smallwood. So the owner of the restaurant, Joe Bishop, he owns Bungalow Joe's, he came out and said, basically there's no motive for this shooting. Don't try to make it political. He said nobody had ever seen this guy before. It was a totally random act. So the facts of the case are a little bit murky because, well, information seems to be withheld in this case so as to not rile up white people. But it looks like it can be confirmed that the shooter, Michael E. Rhines Jr., is definitely a black man, but he was wearing a Justice for Breonna Taylor shirt. Yep, you could see him as he's being taken into custody. He's wearing that Justice for Breonna Taylor shirt. And it was three white people who he murdered. So in case you haven't been hearing all about Breonna Taylor from the Say Her Name BLM crowd, if you hear people saying, say her name, it's Breonna. That's who they're talking about. Let me give you a brief recap here. She's a black woman. She was an EMT. She was killed by the Louisville police. After police busted through her door, they had a warrant. They were serving a warrant, which her name was on, because she and her buddies there, including her boyfriend, well, they were engaged in narcotics trafficking, okay? So, I could read you the little warrant here. Seems they had weapons, too. And that the police were to search the house and gather whatever they could. So, when they went, they knocked down the door, and Brianna's boyfriend shot at the police. Now, this is why you don't want no-knock warrants and everything like that. I don't know the specifics of this. So, Brianna's boyfriend shot at the police, and they returned fire, and that's why she died. Okay? Say her name! Oh, well, she was trafficking drugs. Her name was on the warrant, and her boyfriend opened fire on the police. I wonder why the police shot her. It must be racism, guys. Police have never done this kind of stuff to a white person. Oh, they have? Oh, it's just that we don't hear about it when they do. Breonna Taylor's death has been a huge rallying cry for BLM, and the Jewish media has covered this story with fervent anti-white zeal. They, basically, the Jewish media has incited the shooter, Michael E. Rhines Jr., to walk into Bungalow Joe's in Louisville. Seems like a fairly white clientele, and he opened fire on all these evil white people. He was getting justice for Breonna. That's what he was doing. That's why he was wearing the shirt. Black Lives Matter, so kill Whitey. There won't be any large protests, will there? If there are protests, it's not going to be supported by the local or federal government. Now, I looked into this Louisville mayor just a little bit, Greg Fisher. He's a big supporter of the protests against the racist establishment. He essentially endorsed rioting in the city. You know, there was a planned protest, and he said, their goal, as John Lewis said, is to create good trouble that leads to a better, more racially equitable society. And that's a goal I hope we all can agree on. Yeah, maybe their tactics, you know, they're troublesome, but it's good trouble. Was Michael E. Rhines Jr. creating good trouble? Does that fit in that definition? When he killed three white people? But again, nobody's really going to know about this, are they? People don't realize, whether they like it or not, there is a race war raging in America. And we've been on the losing side for quite a while. I don't want this race war. but we need to defend ourselves. Let's take a look here about how Black Lives Matter is very much shooting themselves in the foot with all of their, let's call them shenanigans. You know, the burning, looting, murdering, all that. Yeah. This is an article I republished from Information Liberation. Support for the Black Lives Matter movement has been falling rapidly among whites and Hispanics over the past 3 months of riots, murder, and mayhem. A new Pew Research survey found general support for the movement among whites has fallen 15% from 60 to 45%. That's still way too high. And support among Hispanics has fallen 11% from 77 to 66. And this is why, guys, this is why the NBA and the NFL are losing their audience. People are fed up with this crap. Oh, we're against the racist system. We're against the system. You know, down with the man. Stick it to the man. And all the while, the big corporations, the big sports leagues, they're all on board. All the politicians, all on board. Oh, yeah, you're totally anti-establishment. What a joke. This is just an organic grassroots movement. They're just so righteous that these big corporations had to support them. Another story I published this week was about the University of Rhode Island. I had spent a little time there. I visited some friends at URI back when I was in high school. Seemed like a decent little place. But they had these two folk art murals, and they were painted in the 1950s by an alumnus and a veteran, Dr. Arthur Sherman. He'd actually go on and teach at the university. And these murals were honoring people who'd fought in World War II from URI. So what it depicted was students talking to each other and heading to the campus in the era of the GI Bill. It was in the school's memorial union, but these big murals are currently covered up and they're going to be removed. And you know why? It's because people didn't feel comfortable sitting near them because there were just too many white people. It was predominantly white. Can you believe this? In the 1950s, you know, before the Jews and Ted Kennedy teamed up to get the 1964 immigration bill, it was 90% white, and that's just terrible. Just thinking about how white this country was, oh, it's heartbreaking. Just, I can't see that. I feel uncomfortable looking at these murals. Look at all those white people. Oh, it's oppressing my eyes. Yeah, there were white people in the mural because the country was predominantly white before white genocide really set in. So the vice president of student affairs, whose name is Kathy Collins, she actually cited the tragic murders of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Jacob Blake as important reasons that the murals had to go. She said, "I think we have to recognize the horrible incidents and the tragic murders of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and most recently Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin during this heightened time. And we, as an institution, have to look at the systems in place across this institution that maybe are not representing who we are today and representing the true diversity of URI today." Yeah, instead of happy white people, why don't you show some twerkers up there? A mural of some black women twerking on the ashes of civilization. How about that? Would that be better for you? I can paint it. Do you want me to go paint that mural for you? I'm a pretty good painter. I like doing murals, so think about it. It's just ridiculous. White people even existing in paintings today is just now deemed unacceptable. We've seen this over and over again. There was even a San Francisco, I think the MoMA art director, he was essentially fired. He was forced to resign for saying that he'd still feature white people, white men. He'd still feature the work of white men. He wouldn't discriminate against them. Oh, that evil racist. He's a white supremacist. It makes non-whites feel uncomfortable to see white people, okay? Especially a lot of white people in a painting. Ugh, supremacy. It doesn't matter if white people feel comfortable with having their history erased, their ancestors demonized, and their entire culture attacked on a daily basis. No, that doesn't matter. Getting rid of murals that are too white is just one of the many aspects of white genocide, and it's been accelerating here, hasn't it? I conclude the article commenting how it's tragic that if men like Sherman were not duped by Jews to go fight this war against the evil Nazis in World War II, which ensured the victory of world Jewry, we wouldn't be in this position today, now would we? Oh, you gotta go kill Hitler so you can be flooded. Flooded with diversity. Flooded. Enriched. With wave after wave of glorious diversity. You know what? One of the other things that's happened during this whole BLM era is that a bunch of child rapists actually have been released from prison. They've been bailed out. A lot of these people have been bailed out, you know, who are protesting, a.k.a. rioting, looting, and burning. They went on to commit more crimes. Here's one little article in particular. BLM bail fund promoted by Kamala Harris helped bail out man accused of raping an 8-year-old girl. Oh, this is social justice for you. Again, from Information Liberation here. The Minnesota Freedom Fund, promoted by Democratic vice presidential nominee Kamala Harris, is bailing out accused child rapists and murderers. This guy is Timothy Wayne Columbus. And he put his thing inside me, an 8-year-old girl told authorities as they investigated allegations that 37-year-old Timothy Wayne Columbus sexually assaulted a child. He's a repeat sex offender bailed out by the MFF, which paid between $75,000 to $300,000 for him. Oh my God, they knew his case. They knew what he was in for. And they spent $75,000 to $300,000 to bail him out. Oh wow. Let's take a look at another person who was bailed out. Richard Raynell Kelly broke into his 71-year-old mother's house, left her tied up in a pool of her own blood. The MFF bailed him out for between $4,000 and $50,000. He then skipped bail and remains at large. Wow, look at that. This is so disgusting. This is insane. Deshaun Jermaine Boyd. Deshaun? Surveillance video shows Deshaun Jermaine Boyd knocking a man with a cane to the ground and then stomping on his head before robbing him. The MFF bailed him out, too. This is crazy. Oh, it's just sickening to see what is happening in this country. A tweet from Kamala Harris here. If you're able to, chip in now to the MN Freedom Fund to help post bail for those protesting on the ground in Minnesota. Wow. This is justice here for you. The Minnesota Freedom Fund. Oh, wow. Yeah, so the people who are behind this, the team, they don't look black. They look very strange. Are they white? Maybe a few of them. Greg Lewin, oh, he looks like he is very, very chosen. Oh, Jeff Stryer, he looks like a mensch. Michael Friedman, are those Aryan jeans I see? No. Maybe some Ashkenazi, though. And some of the others, yeah, it looks like a bunch of Jews who are spending a bunch of money to get child rapists and murderers and people who beat up elderly people released from jail. Well, that's interesting. But you know what? Black lives matter, people. Black lives matter. A couple days ago, I watched something on 153 News here. A site I'm not going to endorse because it's run by an insane, obviously, Christ-hearted shill who lies about a bunch of stuff, like when his server was stolen or something like that. But anyway, he had this video up, Tyrone Woodley Answers Every Question at Presser with Black Lives Matter. So Tyrone Woodley is a UFC fighter. He used to be the champ at 170 pounds. He's a black guy. Now he just sucks. And I'll talk about his latest fight, but he was in the lead up to his latest fight, which just took place last night. He was answering every single question at the press conference because Black Lives Matter. I'm going to skip into this just a little bit and play just a little bit so you get a little taste of what this is all about.
We're going to be up there together, and this is going to be a joint press conference. We find out it's not. Let me ask you: Are you disappointed that you don't get the chance to face him down, to you know, deal with him, or are you kind of happy you don't have to put up with this stuff today?
I'm just excited that Black Lives Matter.
Are you surprised that in the lead up to this fight that he hasn't been more vocal? I mean, this is Colby Covington. He's almost been respectful of you. Is that shocking to you at all that he hasn't gone into more like he normally does?
I'm just really excited that Black Lives Matter.
Fair enough. And we know that it looks like Usman and Burns is later, this year. A win here would be big for you. Would you keep yourself ready to be a fill-in opponent on a title fight, or are you at a point in your career where you wouldn't do that?
I feel like, a victory here just really shows how much Black Lives Matter.
Fair enough. And then my last question for you then, obviously the Black Lives Matter shirt on, clearly you want to keep it in that direction today. Would you like to use this platform to deliver any messages to everyone out there?
Just that Black Lives Matter.
That's pretty dumb. Now, because Colby Covington, who was his opponent, wears the MAGA hat, he's wearing a red hat with white font that says, "Make racists catch the fade again." I think that means to punch white people. I think that's what it means. Because all white people are pretty much racist. But make white racists catch the fade again. Okay. Well, in that fight that did take place last night, which is just, it's the perfect kind of Hegelian dialectic. You can root for Colby Covington, who wears the MAGA hat, loves President Trump, or you can root for the Black Lives Matter guy. I gotta admit, I don't like Colby Covington, but it was gratifying to see this anti-white piece of garbage, Tyrone Woodley, get absolutely dominated. Just completely outstruck, taken down, and he cried out in pain in the fifth round. Because I guess his rib got hurt as he was getting smashed. And that's what stopped the fight. Because he cried out like a little bitch. Basically, he punched Colby Covington, I don't know, significantly a few times. While just getting absolutely dominated the whole time. Because Black Lives Matter. What an idiot. The whole press conference. Because Black Lives Matter. That's right. You know, the murder rate in this country has gone up by about 40% everywhere, just across the board. Now, part of that's due to the lockdown and all the psychological warfare, but a lot of that's just because a lot of these black murderers feel emboldened. And speaking of Black Lives Mattering and murder, 13% of the population, black people, commits about half of all the murders here in America. Black murders matter? How about that one? But anyway, suicide, alcoholism, that's all been going up as well. Now, something that a lot of people were commenting upon this week was Bill O'Reilly coming out and talking about this incident where Newt Gingrich. So, I mean, the big event was Newt Gingrich was on Fox News talking about George Soros funding protests and everything. Now, I don't trust Newt Gingrich one bit, nor do I trust Bill O'Reilly. But what was crazy was Fox News shutting down conversation of this. And what was a little bit surprising is that Bill O'Reilly covered this and was talking about how George Soros is a Jew, a secular Jew, not that it matters. So, oops, this is just a picture. Never mind. It doesn't really matter. Just saying, Soros is using his billions of dollars to undermine the justice system in the United States, and you can't discuss that? It was crazy the way that Newt Gingrich was shut down on Fox News. Leave George Soros out of this, okay? Anti-Semitic. It's anti-Semitic to bring up George Soros. That is an anti-Semitic dog whistle. So even Shill O'Reilly was talking about this, about George Soros is Jewish. Not that it matters, but... I can't play the clip because I grabbed the image rather than the video. There was a story I saw today about how the white working class in Britain is, the children of the white working class is being left behind, and they're the hardest hit by the COVID fallout. This was from the Daily Mail, not like they're actually advocating for white people, but just presenting pretty much what everybody who is listening to this network already knows. But this research was submitted to the Committee Education Select Committee. Children eligible for free school meals half as likely to do well in SEs as poor people from ethnic backgrounds. One Oxford University don said plight of working class white children was seen as unfashionable. Yeah. So they're spending all this money, putting in all of these resources to make sure that people who don't even speak English get the best education they can possibly get, while the indigenous British children, that's correct, they're indigenous British children, are being completely displaced, aka genocided, and they're not getting any of these funds. They're just being left behind. Nobody cares about the white children. The Oxford University guy also said that it wasn't just unfashionable. It's just that the white children aren't worthy. It's not worthy to fight hard for them. It's taboo, especially in academic circles. And it's always associated with hard right political thinking. How dare you think about the white children? Oh, you a racist? Oh, jeez. All right, guys, that looks like pretty much all the time I have for you here tonight. I appreciate you tuning in. Appreciate the people who support the network in whatever way they can. And also, please, pick up some Heathen Herbs products right now. I'll talk to you all again soon. Stay tuned to the network.
Issuing statements in support of refugees. These have included the Orthodox Union, the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum, and so many of the Jewish organizations that you heard are co-sponsors of this event.
You're listening to Resolution Radio. Resolutionrdo.com.